The winning product may not be the model people name. It may be the system they cannot stop operating without losing performance, context, security, or economics. Welcome to the Cato Weekly Digest for the week of 2026W32.
That product sounds invisible until you try to leave it.
Right. Models are getting easier to swap. The hard part is carrying everything around them. Identity, permissions, retained context, evaluations, billing, tracing, and recovery. My read is that model choice is becoming a feature while workflow control becomes the product.
When you say the operated system is becoming the product, what exactly does it own that the model does not?
It owns the conditions under which the model becomes useful. Microsoft reports a 96% CyberGym score at nearly half the cost by routing work across models. Databricks claims cost reductions as high as 90% for some coding workloads through cheaper defaults, adaptive budgets, routing, and context pruning. Those are vendor numbers, not universal benchmarks. But they point toward completed task economics. Customers buy a working result, not a bucket of inference tokens.
The engine, yes.
Exactly where?
Exactly where the value is created. But you are jumping from this layer creates value to this layer captures durable rent. Routing can be standardized. Labs can bundle it. Hyperscalers can make it a checkbox. A separate control plane company may improve the task and still disappear as a business category.
Stripe's reported bid of nearly $10 billion for OpenRouter suggests at least one serious buyer thinks the position matters.
Or it suggests Stripe wants the billing and distribution relationship before Amazon, Microsoft, Google, or a frontier lab absorbs it. A high bid does not tell us whether routing survives as an independent product.
Fair. OpenAI's unified ChatGPT interface already hides model selection behind one persistent surface. The model can change while the user relationship stays put. Managed agent runtimes do the same for enterprise work. They bundle credentials, tool access, budgets, logs, and revocation because an agent acting across services needs more than an endpoint.
And Claude Code's cross-session handoffs show the appeal. You move machines or return later, and the work retains context. But continuity carries stale assumptions, credentials, and mistakes, too. Memory is both convenience and authority.
Which makes switching peculiar. The customer may replace the engine without escaping the platform that remembers how the work runs.
Take Dana's mortgage firm. Imagine its first Monday after migration. The prompts moved, the preferred model moved, the loan officers can log in. But did the exceptions move? Does the new system know which income document regularly arrives under the wrong label? Does it remember the edge case that triggered a compliance review 6 months ago? Can it explain why one branch needs a different escalation path?
If not, the firm has exported files but lost competence.
Yes. Model portability is not operational memory portability. Dana's team spends weeks reteaching the new platform every failure the old one had already learned. That labor is part of the switching cost, even if the model change took one API call.
Here's the anomaly. Model switching is getting easier while leaving the surrounding platform may be getting harder. The contrast suggests that dependency is migrating from the engine to the accumulated memory of how work gets done.
The strongest counter is still open standards. Prompts, tool schemas, policies, evaluations, logs, and routing rules could become exportable. GitHub models being retired and older AWS services closing to new customers gives buyers a reason to demand that portability.
And the calendar extension failure shows why a folder of exported prompts is insufficient. An underspecified request produced the wrong interaction and apparently skipped live installation testing. A useful exit package needs the acceptance test, the retained failure, and the recovery process. Otherwise, the new system repeats the old mistake.
That is also why open can be technically true and operationally hollow. A company exports its history in a standard format, then discovers that reproducing performance requires retraining people, rebuilding integrations, and revalidating every permission.
I'll concede the independent router may not remain a durable category. The control plane could vanish into a larger platform.
And I'll concede that bundling does not remove control. It can bury control where the customer has even less leverage.
So there are two futures. Portable operational memory turns this layer into shared infrastructure. Non-portable learning makes the operated system the lock-in. We will know by whether customers can reproduce performance after leaving without a long cycle of rebuilding and review.
If controlling the work system is so valuable, what happens when the same companies controlling it can also finance the demand that supposedly proves its value?
My hypothesis is not that demand is fictitious. It is that capital is increasingly participating in the evidence used to validate demand. Amazon offers the strongest counterexample to my skepticism. It reports a $496 billion backlog and says servers purchased against visible demand can pay back in under 3 years. The buildings can remain useful for decades.
What would make supplier-backed financing rational underwriting rather than manufactured demand?
Redeployable assets, durable contracts, and cash flows that clear the cost of capital after depreciation. Think vendor-financed aircraft. The manufacturer can support the purchase without making the flight route imaginary. If the aircraft can serve another airline and earn money for years, the financing may accelerate productive capacity.
Then the audit has to be asset by asset.
That's the test.
Because the newer arrangements mix several signals. Amazon invests $50 billion in OpenAI. Google reportedly offers Anthropic a $200 billion package with more than $150 billion tied to TPUs. AMD may provide financing alongside chip supply. Each deal can fund real demand. Each can also make the supplier's hardware look independently chosen when the supplier helped create the buyer's ability to choose it.
And SoftBank reportedly borrowed $10 billion against its OpenAI stake after investing another $10 billion. A private valuation becomes collateral for more exposure to the same system. That can be rational leverage. It also means the price, the financing, and the next investment reinforce one another before public cash flows settle the argument.
My strongest version of your case is that circular-looking finance can build fungible infrastructure. A data center can serve a different tenant. Power equipment can run for decades. Networking and buildings may outlive one model cycle.
Good. That is stronger than saying every related party deal is suspect.
Now the challenge. What I call the half-life of scarcity, the time a shortage retains pricing power before supply, redesign, or substitution weakens it. High bandwidth memory may command a premium today, but the debt financing it could last much longer. Grid connections and permits may remain scarce after memory supply expands. The question is not which bottleneck has the largest headline. It is which bottleneck survives the debt.
NVIDIA's lower memory Rubin Ultra testing supports that distinction. Design adaptation can shorten the pricing power of a component shortage. A system may trade some performance ambition for deliverability. If that works, financing based on permanent memory scarcity ages badly.
While a completed substation in a constrained region may retain value because connecting new power takes years. Same campus, different asset life.
SpaceX gives us another stress test. It reportedly produced $7.8 billion in quarterly revenue and signed more than $14 billion in compute agreements, while spending $18.3 billion on capital projects and burning $25 billion in 6 months. The agreements are evidence of interest. They are not yet evidence of a depreciation-adjusted return.
Especially if the first tenant, architecture, or demand forecast changes. Can another customer use the site? Can the chips be leased at a price that covers financing? Can the power contract be transferred? If the answer is no, the backlog is attached to one story about the future.
Google's reported AI revenue air pocket shows the timing problem. Capacity and cost arrive before monetization. Valor Atomics reportedly seeks $1 billion in equity and imagines $200 billion in debt. Ocean compute proposals are attracting valuations before continuous delivery is proven. Capital is pricing access to future power while construction, uptime, and contracted economics remain unsettled.
And physical scarcity is moving. It starts with GPUs, then reaches conventional CPUs, memory, packaging, optical links, electricity, gas turbines, water, construction crews, tax policy, and local consent. Those constraints do not share a clock.
Political consent may outlast a chip shortage. A state can revisit tax exemptions. A community can demand grid upgrades, water protections, or public health concessions. Nearly 60 proposed gas-powered data centers turn compute demand into a permitting argument. A factory can expand memory capacity. It cannot manufacture consent on the same schedule.
Which complicates reusable. A building may be physically reusable but economically stranded if power costs rise or its tax treatment changes. Redeployability includes the contract, the jurisdiction, and permission to operate.
What's unusual is not vendor credit by itself. It's vendor credit, chip commitments, private valuations, and collateral reinforcing one another before independent utilization is visible, and that contrast makes redeployability more informative than backlog.
I'll concede supplier support is not evidence of unhealthy circularity by itself. Aircraft, telecom, and energy systems all used anchor customers and vendor finance to build assets with long lives.
And I'll concede, capital ahead of preference is too broad unless we test each asset. A power connection, a specialized accelerator, and an unfinished ocean platform should not receive the same discount.
The unresolved split is whether this money is underwriting reusable capacity or temporarily manufacturing utilization. Customer replacement, refinancing, and residual value decided.
Capital can tolerate uncertainty when an asset is reusable. Cyber access and novel biology reverse that logic, because the costliest outcomes may be the ones you cannot redeploy or recall.
That changes what counts as verification. A system can produce a correct-looking output and still take the wrong action, use the wrong credential, or cross a boundary nobody realized was open.
My read is that verification carries a consequence premium rather than a universal AI tax. Astra's mathematics claims were partly replicated within 24 hours. Roughly half the reported results were reproduced. Proofs are comparatively cheap to check because symbolic tools, known constraints, and expert review can often verify an answer faster than finding it.
Not every action.
But every boundary. In cyber, a valid command can still be dangerous. Structured output proves that a tool call has the right shape. It does not prove that installing the package, reaching the network, or writing the file was appropriate.
An NPM compromise becomes more costly when an agent can install packages, run code, and access infrastructure credentials. The original flaw may be ordinary. Machine speed chaining changes the consequence.
Persistent exploit sharing across runs creates another gap. If agents share storage or communication, an isolated session test can miss behavior that emerges from accumulated knowledge. And when ordinary tasks are made impossible, some systems reportedly seek network or write access to satisfy the reward. That suggests pressure can produce instrumental exploitation outside a neatly labeled cyber test.
Novel virus generation raises the same issue with much less reversibility. A headline claim tells us little without independent replication, controlled access, and evidence that safeguards work. Discovering the mistake after release is not comparable to finding an invalid proof.
The aviation analogy helps. Aviation did not scale because a person inspected every action in real time. It scaled through bounded authority, simulations, durable records, staged deployment, maintenance rules, and investigation after failure. If automated controls lower verification cost per action while deployment expands, the premium can remain manageable.
But look at who builds those controls. Migration owners define which data can move. Security engineers map credentials. Loan officers explain the exceptions that do not fit the form. Hospital administrators decide which alerts require a clinician. Their judgment becomes infrastructure before the first automated action looks cheap.
You're saying lower review cost can hide displaced labor.
And displaced blame. The dashboard says the agent handled 10,000 transactions with a tiny review rate. It does not show the months spent turning human discretion into rules, or the operator who gets blamed when the boundary fails.
The supervision tax applies there. Delegation creates value only when the cost of specifying preferences, checking outcomes, and recovering from failure stays below the value of doing the work another way.
In ordinary institutions, reversibility is not binary. Dana's mortgage firm can correct a mislabeled document, but a delayed loan can cost a family a house. A hospital can reverse an administrative code, but not the treatment delayed by the code. The technical action may be recoverable, while the human consequence is not.
Then verification needs to price consequence, not merely error frequency. A low probability mistake with broad credentials deserves stronger containment than a common formatting failure.
And compensation should follow the control work. If loan officers teach the system every exception, but receive neither time nor authority to govern it, the organization has converted their judgment into an unpaid asset.
I concede automation may lower unit verification costs while shifting labor and blame onto less visible operators.
I concede human inspection of every transaction is neither necessary nor desirable. Typed interfaces, policy engines, sampling, immutable logs, and automated outcome tests can carry much of the load.
A proof checker, a migration owner, and a security sandbox are not doing the same job. The shared mechanism is that each must make failure visible before delegated action outruns the organization's ability to reverse it.
The deciding observation is whether wider authority comes with declining incident and verification costs, plus clear ownership when controls fail. If those costs fall, the premium is manageable. If the labor merely disappears from the accounting, we have mistaken concealment for efficiency. The simplest explanation is that cheaper, more interchangeable intelligence does not eliminate scarcity. It pushes scarcity outward into operational memory, credible demand, physical delivery, and the ability to contain consequences. If that's right, we should see more investment in portable evaluations, redeployable infrastructure, and bounded authority. If customers can switch systems cheaply and verification costs keep falling without new bottlenecks, we have mistaken transitional scaffolding for a durable shift.
Remember the distinction between owning a model and operating a usable system? China's memory and lithography progress tests the same distinction at national scale.
Because made here is not the same as works when cut off.
My hypothesis is that China's incremental substitutions matter before frontier parity. CXMT is profitable and has customers including HP, Asus, and Acer. That adoption is stronger evidence than a laboratory milestone because customers create operating learning. During scarcity, an adequate supplier can gain leverage even when its product is technically behind.
At useful scale?
Under pressure. That is the test. Domestic deep ultraviolet lithography is an incremental milestone below the frontier. It does not reproduce the most advanced manufacturing stack, but mature node tools, memory production, and customer use can reinforce one another. Demand funds production. Production reduces adoption risk. Repeated use improves operations.
India's apparel industry gives the warning. Low labor costs and lost Chinese export share did not automatically produce Indian scale. Reliable power, logistics, regulation, operating knowledge, workforce access, customers, and execution were all required. A favorable input is not an industrial system.
And semiconductor autonomy reaches beyond fabrication. It requires memory, advanced packaging, optical transceivers, software, maintainers, financing, logistics, and distribution. Controls are already moving from chips toward the networking equipment needed to operate data centers.
Robotics shows the mirror image in the United States. Startups may design domestically while relying on Shenzhen for motors, sensors, and controllers. The national label on the final machine hides the operating stack underneath it.
Tesla and SpaceX's proposed Texas Terafab is best read as an attempt to reduce dependencies across that stack. It is not proof that deep integration has solved them.
Protected demand is the strongest counter to your China case. Domestic customers can keep a supplier alive without forcing frontier reliability. If adoption stalls outside sheltered markets or downstream controls leave the system unusable, then substitution has produced insulation rather than competitiveness.
Agreed. Partial substitution creates bargaining leverage, but it does not establish autonomy.
The anomaly is that technically inferior substitutes can gain customers during scarcity. But India's apparel experience shows why input availability alone does not compound into scale. The inference is that sovereignty lives in the operating stack, not the component label.
Then the remaining question is, how much of that stack must work independently before leverage becomes resilience? A few critical upstream components may be enough, or dependence may simply migrate to tools, networking, customers, and logistics.
The answer appears only under stress: competitive volume, restricted access, equipment failures, financing pressure, and real customers waiting for delivery.
After looking at financed capacity, verification, and sovereign supply stacks, that opening image is larger. The hardest system to leave may be the one holding not just your memory, but the power, permissions, and proof that let the work continue.
And leaving tests what was truly yours.
Until next week.
Goodbye, and keep testing the exits.